Dear listeners, loving Sai Ram's greetings from Prashanti Nilayam, the spiritual capital of the entire universe. You are tuned to Asia Stream of Radio Sai Global Harmony, bringing you the message of Bhagawan Sri Satya Sai Baba. The time right now in our studio is 11:45 a.m. Indian Standard Time, and the weather at Prashanti Nilayam is very, very pleasant. It's a mixture of bright sunshine and also cloudy weather. It looks as if sun god and clouds are playing hide-and-seek game or something like that. Well, the summer days are over and today is 9th of July 2015. And this is a segment, Service Love in Action, and I am Raghu from Team Radio Sai. Well, dear listeners, if you are there with me last week, in the last segment of Service Love in Action, I had Brother Sai Giridhar, research scholar from Swamiji University, and he shared with us few stories from the epic Ramayana, from which we can learn lessons on Seva. And today he has joined me again for today's segment. Sai Ram, brother, and warm welcome once again.
Sai Ram, Raghu, it's always a pleasure.
And also, dear listeners, brother has also promised that another brother, Brother K.M. Ganesh, will also be joining us, another research scholar from Swami's University. In a while from now, he couldn't make it on time, but in between of the segment, he will be sure joining us and he will share some more stories, right?
Hopefully so, yes.
So last week, predominantly we spoke on Hanuman, the amazing character from whom we can learn a lot on Seva.
Yes.
In fact, I am always fascinated by the character Hanuman, and I'm always reminded, like, when he was asked, "Who are you?" he told, "Dasoham Kosalendrasya, I am the servant of Lord Rama." In fact, from this, we can learn lessons on Seva, and also another aspect that we can learn is the humility, right?
Indeed, yes.
Yeah, he, as you said last week, he was an amsha of Shiva, and he could have told so many things about his power and strength, but still he told that he is the servant of Lord Rama. So drawing parallel to this, about Swami's devotee, I want to share an experience.
Oh, wonderful. Please,
an incident.
Please.
You may be knowing about the Ganga Sagar Mela. Are you aware of it?
I am aware of Ganga Sagar, though.
Yeah.
It's the place where the Ganges confluences with the Bay of Bengal.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Bay of Bengal. So every year on Makar Sankranti day, about 5 lakh pilgrims go to this Mela called Ganga Sagar Mela. In fact, in India, it's the second largest Mela after Kumbh Mela, happens once in 4 years. But this happens every year during Makar Sankranti, on the Makar Sankranti day. So the pilgrims go there, take a dip in the ocean where Ganga meets the Bay of Bengal, and then they go to the Kapil Muni temple.
Wow.
There is one Kapil Muni temple and have the darshan. So this is the ritual which is happening. But what happens is these 5 lakhs devotees, pilgrims, go there, but they don't have a place for their nature's call, for excreta and urine, all those things. So they go to the beach in an open. They do it there, and earlier it was a very unpleasant thing.
In the open, unhygienic also.
Very unhygienic. So it seems after the Mela, for about 1 month, the stink will be there, and it's an unholy thing. Now, from past 25 years, Swami Sevadas are doing the activity of cleaning this night soil, this human excreta, in that beach where the pilgrims go and do it. So I just want to share how it all started. This Ganga Sagar Mela is happening from many decades, but nobody came forward to clean the waste, the sanitation work. So it seems the organizers of the Mela were looking for some group which can come forward. In fact, it seems there were many NGOs who are doing many other service activities during this Mela, taking care of the crowd control, accommodation, and so many other administration, so many other things. But no one came forward for this sanitation work. So this was told to Satya Sai Seva Organization of West Bengal. And then the state president himself went to the organizer And he told, yeah, we are there, we are ready to come forward. So the organizer told, okay, you bring so many sweepers on this day and you come. So on that day, particular day when the Sai organization were called, so the organizer asked the state president, the then state president, I don't know who he was, I am not able to recollect. So the organizer asked, so how many sweepers have you got to clean? Then the state president said, no, I didn't get any sweepers with me. Then the organizer was little irritated. What, you didn't get any sweepers? Then who is going to clean? Come on. What, are you kidding? Then the state president said, I'm going to clean. I am the sweeper. And there are many sevadars with me who are who will be the sweepers and we are going to clean.
Wow.
So I just drew a parallel, like just like he is the state president of West Bengal, and even professionally he was doing very well, a wealthy man.
Yes, yes.
If he wanted, he could have appointed few sweepers and called few sweepers, but he himself was ready to take the broom and sweep. Right. I just drew a parallel with Hanuman, how he said when asked who you are. So today, I want you to share some more experiences, some more stories from Ramayana. So from where shall we start today?
I think from the experience that you narrated, you know, which talks about certain aspects of seva which could be very difficult for one to do, you know, in a normal parlance. One such thing I can remember is of Mother Kaikeyi. You know, for 20,000 years, she carried a tarnish, a black mark in her character. No mother has named their child after Kaikeyi.
Yeah.
Until the Lord Sri Rama himself, who came in the form of our beloved Bhagawan, Sri Satya Sai, and revealed to us the inner secret behind why she did that, you know. We all know this story from Bhagwan. It's quite famous now among the devotees that when Mother Kaikeyi was approached by Sri Rama with a prayer, with a request, and he said, Mother, I need a help from you. Can you do it for me? And Mother said, Rama, I'm ready to give my life for you. How
this happens just before Rama is sent to exile.
Yes, into forest, yes. Right? This happens after Sri Rama's marriage and before the first coronation and eventual exile after that, right? Their mother Kaikeyi was approached by Sri Rama, and the Lord asks her, his mother, Mother, can you do this favor for me? And Mother says, like, I'm ready to give my life for you. Tell me how I can serve you. You know, and the Lord says that it's not that easy, Mother. It's not as easy as even giving up life. It's much more difficult than that. You know, your name will be tarnished for eternity. And no mother will ever name her child after you. You know, it is that how badly it will be tarnished. Is that okay for you? She said, Son, this life is because of you. You are the very life breath of all of us who stay here in Ayodhya. And you have a grand mission. And for that, whatever service that we can render, I am ready to do. My name and fame are but insignificant things. And in front of your mission and your will, this name and fame has no meaning. So you please tell me how I can serve you. And then Sri Rama says, can you ask Father for those two boons now, which he had promised you earlier, you know, when Kaikeyi was responsible for saving the life of Dasharatha. He offered her two boons.
Yes.
And she said, I'll take them later. You know, she was not really interested in anything at that point of time. And Rama said, now ask for these two boons, Mother. And she said, what should they be? And the Lord says, send me to the forest for 14 years. For in the luxuries of Ayodhya does not lie the mission of my life. It is there in the forest. It is there amidst the sages who are dwelling there. It's there amidst the devotees who are pining for me there. You know. So ask me, ask me to be sent to the forest in exile, and ask for Bharata to be crowned. And this was something which came as a shock to Mother. But she acceded to the divine request and she eventually made this request. Of course, as part of the divine drama, it had to go on in the normal way. So we all know how mantra had influenced or poisoned the mind of Mother Kaikeyi, mantra who was the housemaid, the personal maid of Mother Kaikeyi, who also brought her up during her childhood days. So that is how it went on. But if we just look at this personality of Mother Kaikeyi, who loved Rama much more than her own son, you know, it is said that all her skills, she was a great master of many art forms, especially in warfare, right? All her archery skills and all other art forms that she was a master of, she gave it to Rama first. She taught Rama first, even before she taught Bharata anything. That is how much she loved Rama intensely, you know. And like we were discussing in the last segment also, seva or service is an outpouring of love. It is not that we gain love after seva. No, true seva is really an outpouring of love. When it is too much, it's overflowing, it simply manifests itself in the form of service. So that is what I feel Mother Kaikeyi did. She put aside her name and fame. It's not so easy to, you know, take the tarnish on your character, on your personality. When you walk about, everybody is looking at you with very strong judgmental eyes and sometimes even cursing you for what you have done and what befall you have caused to the city of Ayodhya and the Kosala kingdom itself by sending away Rama. She was ready to take upon herself all that pain, all that agony for the service of the nation, for the service of the universe at large, because that was the mission of Lord Rama, isn't it? So I think Mother Kaikeyi was one such personality whom we all should bow in reverence today, because the Lord himself revealed her great act of seva. The other mother, that is Mother Sumitra, is also an exemplary example of seva, who had the ability to put down her own, you know, wishes, her ego and all those factors which usually play in a human being. And her mission or vision for her two sons, Shatrughna and Lakshmana, you know, she knew very well that neither of them can actually become the king or the emperor of this great nation. But her advice to them was stellar, exemplary. Mother Sumitra calls both her sons and says, "Son Lakshmana, it is your duty, even if you have to give up your life for it, you have to serve Sri Rama." And she told Shatrughna that, "Son Shatrughna, your duty is to protect Bharata from any harm." So both her sons were advised by her strongly right from their childhood to serve their brothers. And their brothers, in fact, Swami says, because Rama is a hero of Ramayana, and the Upanayaka, that is the second hero of Ramayana, is Bharata, Swami says. So one son, Lakshmana, was serving the Nayaka of Ramayana, which is Sri Rama, and her other son, Shatrughna, was serving the Upanayaka, that is Bharata. So each of these mothers were embodiments of such selflessness, intense love, and this selflessness, this intense love, always found some way or the other to express itself in welfare of others, which is nothing but seva, isn't it?
Yeah. In fact, when you are telling about Kaikeyi, Mother Kaikeyi, so it's Rama who was responsible for going, right?
See, in the sense
generally
that,
we blame Kaikeyi for the act.
Yeah,
right?
But see, but if you look at the story carefully, and the whole story itself is a divine will. The whole creation is a divine drama. And in that drama, there are many people who are so close to the director, the divine director of the drama, that he takes them into confidence and, you know, he makes them do certain roles. In fact, Krishna made Arjuna realize this, you know, when Arjuna was despondent and the Bhagavad Gita was being given in the battlefield, Krishna gave Arjuna the vision of what is called the Vishwarupa. Vishwarupa, as Bhagavan has very beautifully explained, is the realization that all the heads belong to God. Sahasra Shirsha Purushaha, Sahasraksha Sahasrapath. All the eyes belong to God, all hands belong to God. Which means, basically, Devam Manushya Rupena. That is, the entire humanity, the entire creation is but a manifestation of God. When Lord Krishna gave this vision to Arjuna, he then said, see carefully, Arjuna. Yudhishthira is also me. Duryodhana is also me. You know? Bhishma is also me. Drona is also me. Dushasana is also me. You are also me. So he said, everything is I. So in the perspective of the cosmic principle or divine director, he plays many divine dramas. But the story per se, the script of Ramayana per se, has to be read in both ways. The deeper significance of Ramayana comes in the form of Adhyatma Ramayana. And the general story per se has got tremendous value system. See, having said that, though Sri Rama might have approached Mother Kaikeyi, did she ever let anybody know that was the case? It could be very easy. Today, if somebody is put to great shame and abuse because of their wrongdoings, and if somebody else is responsible, how much time do we take to actually say, no, I didn't do anything, actually this person did.
Correct.
Right? See, that is a sign of a great sevak.
Yeah.
A sevak never reveals what are the instructions of the Lord. He only simply executes it. And the instructions of the Lord is always meant for loka kalyana. See, that is what we need to recognize. It's not that he gives some command and somebody implicitly follows it and that's something wrong to do. Because the command of the Lord is always selfless. It's meant for loka kalyana. Rama asked her for, you know, taking up this blame to set an example for everybody. Why? There is a lot of intricate stories involved in this. For example, Mantara was actually a female deer in her previous birth.
Oh,
who was killed by Dasharatha during his hunting expedition, you know. And she was not killed. Her husband, the male deer, was killed by Dasharatha during a hunting expedition. So there was great pain in that deer. So it was a kind of a vengeance which it carried against him. It was born again in the form of Mantara, and eventually that kind of remorse was there within its vasanas and its inner qualities. So that was manifesting as some kind of revenge it wanted to take. It is also said that at some point Dasharatha had mocked at Mantara for certain thing. There is also a story which says that when Rama and the four brothers were playing, they were playing with a ball, and inadvertently, the ball hit Mantara's hunchback. You know, she had a hunchback kind of a look. So it hit her back, and the children were just playing, and it was by mistake that it hit. But when Rama went and apologized, she felt that Sri Rama was actually poking fun at her. So there were many such negative emotions that Mantara was brewing all through her life, and her own past had to find its fruition. You know, in the form of being responsible for destruction of Dasharatha's family in some way, you know. So there are many intricate stories like this. It's a very complex web of things. But the divine director is so extraordinary. Bhagavan is so extraordinary.
Yes.
That he weaves all these intricate threads so finely. Yet there is a very profound message in everything, isn't it? And he plays his divine drama all through.
Yeah.
So in that way, yes, Rama did say ask Kaikeyi for these two boons, but it was again for the service of mankind, for loka kalyana.
Correct. When you are talking about this divine drama, I would just like to share one small experience from Swami's divine drama. That Swami had an episode many years back. It seems Professor Kasturi, he was Swami's translator during Swami's discourse. So Swami gave one discourse and Professor Kasturi was translating. After that, Swami came inside, and at that time Professor Nanjundaya sir, he was also with Swami, and he was doing Swami's he was pressing Swami's feet at that time.
Patseva,
he was doing Swami's Patseva, and Swami just casually asked Professor Nanjundaya, so how did Kasturi translate today? Then Nanjundaya sir said, Swami, it was very nice. Sir translated very nicely, very good vocabulary, and he just praised Kasturi like anything. Then Swami said, see, now Kasturi will come here.
Huh.
When he comes, you tell him that when he comes, I will ask you, how did he translate? Then you tell him, no, he didn't translate properly. It was not good. You tell that lie. But you don't tell, I told you that. So it seems, then Professor Kasturi comes inside, and Swami just casually says, oh, Kasturi, you translated nicely today. And then after that, Swami turns to Nanjundaya sir and asks him, so how did Kasturi translate today my discourse? And then Professor Nanjundaya, sir, he starts telling, no, Swami, Kasturi, sir, didn't translate properly. He is very egoistic and all those things. Because Swami had told him to say. And then Kasturi, sir, will get very embarrassed and he will go. And then it seems after that, it seems really he was little egoistic and proud about himself. That he is very good at command, he has got very good command over language.
Yes.
And since this episode happened, he tried to mend himself and he became less proud or whatever. He improved in his personality. So just I shared to draw a parallel about how the divine drama is.
Yeah, it is always for our welfare, isn't it? Whatever Swami does is always for our welfare. And of course, we have with us now correct. Brother Ganesh.
Yeah, dear listeners, I would like to share the, as I told in the beginning, Brother K.M. Ganesh also has come with us and he will also be talking to us about more stories from Ramayana. So, Sairam, brothers.
Sairam, Raghu, brother.
Brother Raghu, actually at this point, you know, you were just mentioning about how even such a great devotee like Kasturi Garu had his own set of challenges in his servitude to the Lord. And that is common for every sevak of the Lord, every sadhak of the Lord. In fact, I would request maybe Brother Ganesh to throw some light on what are the challenges that a sevak of the Lord would face in his journey towards serving his Lord. And I'm sure the best example, of course, again, we'll have to come back to him again and again. There is no choice because he is the exemplar of seva, which is our dearest Hanuman. Right? Brother Ganesh, can you give us some insights on what are the challenges that a sadhaka or a sevak of the Lord faces, like how Hanuman had to face in his own life?
Sam Giridhar, the first thing which is coming in my mind right now is a very beautiful statement of Swami, where he says, it is not the sadhaka that is important, it is the sadhana that is important.
Oh, beautiful.
And Swami goes on to say that you may be feeling that I have been Swami's devotee for so many years, but it is always that you have to check that how have you spent today, this day.
This moment.
Are you doing the sadhana that you are supposed to be? It's not that you have been doing some sadhana for so many years and so you start building. Probably that's the aspect which Swami was chiseling with the Kasturi Garu. And it comes naturally. Maybe, and the divine chiseler, he knows whenever it drops up, he knows how to chisel it. So everyone has to, first thing is don't compare yourself with others, which is a very common phenomena. It is always a competition or a challenge with yourself. And it is like you have to improve yourself day to day. So that is the first thing that you have to understand. You have to see how well you are doing your sadhana. And one of the simplest, metrics of measuring the sadhana is how peaceful you are with yourself.
Wonderful.
That is one of the metrics. So in this context, when we talk about Hanuman, there is a very beautiful insight that we derive from the incident where Hanuman had to cross the ocean in search of Mother Sita. And in every sadhana we know, there are some obstacles which our Lord deliberately keeps. Because he says, test is my taste. And Swami in fact goes on to say that, if the tests are there, you should be proud. Because when are you put through an examination? Only when you are eligible for a promotion. Okay. So that which means that the time has come when you are going to be promoted. So you should take all the challenges, all the difficulties, all the, troubles in life with a good spirit. Because yes, Lord feels that you are fit for promotion. So that should be the attitude. Not instead of that, if you are cribbing and if you are reluctantly going about in life and saying my life has become a pain and so many problems, that is not the right attitude. So first of all, if any problems or challenges are there, know that our Lord is behind it and He wants to grow. And only in the time of challenges and pain, we grow. That is one thing. So what is the attitude that makes a successful sadhaka? So here are some insights that we can gain from Hanuman. So when we, as we know that Hanuman jumps, and as soon as he jumps after a few kilometers,
this is across the ocean,
in search of Mother Sita. And the first obstacle, okay, is Mainak Parvat. Now there is a background to this. Mainak Parvat was saved by Vayudeva, who is father of Hanuman. According to the legends, once Indra was very upset with the mountains, and those days it seems mountains had wings and they could fly from one place to another. So Indra went about cutting all the wings of the mountain, and Mainak took the shelter of Vayudeva, and Vayudeva protected him. So as a gratitude to Vayudeva, he wanted to do some service to Vayuputra, that is Hanuman. And he said, Hanuman, you are it's such a long journey, why don't you take some rest? So to which Hanuman, you know, as Swami says, if you cannot oblige, at least speak obligingly. These are again Swami's teachings. So in our day-to-day life also, we see that we are in some work, and it may be Hanuman put it very rightly to Mainak, see, I am in Rama Karya. I cannot take rest until the Rama Karya is over. And if we have that attitude of whatever Swami says, don't, it is not that the sadhana that you do in a particular moment. If you dedicate all your action to me, it becomes Sairam. It's a Sairam Karya. It's like you're doing it for Swami. Swami Karya, we can say. So in that perspective, if you know that you're doing Swami's work, that is anything, right from, your office work or a homework, if you're dedicating it to Bhagawan, it is Swami's work. So at that point of time also, you may find that some people come, they are very innocent, very good, but they say, come, let us go out for a lunch,
why don't you get some rest, you have been working very hard
and all that,
Swami's project,
and their all. Intention is very good, okay, but you know that you are in the middle of Ramakarya, and one thing about Ramakarya is once you are on it, you should not stop till it is over, okay. So at that moment, you can, just like Hanuman did to Mainak Parvat, he just touched the Mainak Parvat and said, I am on Ramakarya, I'll get back to you, and he moved ahead. Okay, similarly, we can, you know, instead of internally feeling, you know, reluctant to say, okay, you can obviously politely say that I am doing this work which has to be completed and it is very important in this so and so perspective. I'm sure if the person is good, he'll understand. He will not misunderstand. And if he's misunderstanding, then he's not the right person. Obviously, life will take him away from you. So,
in fact, in one of the discourses, I think in the 96 summer course series on Ramayana, Swami had mentioned this point very clearly, and he said, while all other monkeys were happily eating and drinking whatever they could find, Hanuman was one person. He did not touch food or water until he found Mother Sita.
Mother Sita.
His commitment. He said, until my Ramakarya was over. In fact, so much so that there was a point when he searched the entire palace of Lanka before he could meet Vibhishana. He searched the whole place and he couldn't find, and there were suicidal tendencies in him. Swami actually says that Hanuman contemplated suicide, not out of frustration or dejection of life and all. He said, what a noble idea he had. He said, Bhagavan says that Hanuman was thinking at that point of time, if this body cannot be of use to Rama, it cannot be put to service of Rama, what is the use of this body? And today, my Lord has given me this work, this seva, of finding Mother Sita and reporting back to him. If I am unsuccessful in this service of my Lord, what is the use of this body? And he was about to actually, jump into the ocean and give up his life. And that is when he hears this Ramanama, Ram, Ram,
from Vibhishana's
chambers. Mm-hmm. And that's how they meet eventually, So the point you were saying, the first seems to be like a sattvic obstacle.
Good people
with good intentions. Yet they could be an obstacle in our service to our Lord.
Because it is just causing delay. Mm. Even delay is an obstacle.
So what is the strategy we use to overcome a sattvic obstacle?
To politely say that you are doing this, if people don't understand what Ramakarya is, there's always a polite way of saying, no, I'm engaged in this activity which has to be completed in so and so time. I'll get back to you.
Wonderful.
You can get back to them later. But
you can always speak obligingly.
You cannot oblige. So next comes the rajasic obstacle, and we find it in plenty nowadays. People who are there, who are, having a deliberate strategy to come on your way, so that, because they are jealous of your success. Okay, there are many people. And one thing is, we should not pre-assume that people are like that, because Swami says, there is no fault in the srishti, it is only in your drishti. But at the same time, you should be very tactful. So in this case, what happens? Surasa comes, and Surasa is the mother serpent, and she tells Hanuman, only if you get inside my mouth, then I'll allow you to go further. Okay, she didn't say that I want to eat you. Very, you know, indirect way of telling that, you know, you come inside my mouth, obviously we know what is going to happen after that. So even the rajasic obstacles are like that. They are always, you know, in Hindi we call it tedha. Okay, they are never straight. They are very, very, you know, the right word would be, you know,
cunning
and indirect way of, you know, trapping you. It's a trap. And just having devotion as a true devotee is extremely sharp in intellect. Okay, he has got that
sukshma
buddhi has got. And that naturally comes. Because on one occasion, I believe one of the senior devotees asked Swami in Thrai, Swami, it is not about choosing between good and bad. Nowadays it is choosing between two options where one is causing greater harm than the other. Okay, it's not that one is absolutely good, one is absolutely bad. In such situation, how do we make a better choice? And Swami said, if you are living a spiritual life, automatically a sukshma buddhi is endowed upon you.
It Swami comes. In fact mentioned the word, I think, deep discrimination.
Deep discrimination, Swami used the word. So if you are genuine, that is one more sign to know whether you are actually progressing in the right way. One is the inner peace that you feel and the happiness that you, natural happiness you feel within yourself. And also the development of this sukshma buddhi, the deep discrimination, which Hanuman had. So Hanuman had the siddhi. So Hanuman started, you know, increasing his size. It went on from few miles to hundreds of miles. And Surasa also, she had the ability of expanding her mouth. And when it went to thousands of miles, suddenly, in a flash of a moment, Hanuman reduced his size into a small Hanuman of 1 or 2 meters and went inside Surasa's mouth and came out.
So rapidly.
So rapidly, before Surasa could assume the natural form, he was out of the mouth.
Before she could close her
mouth. Close, yes, yes. And here what Hanuman did, he used the tact.
Yeah.
He used yukti. He used the yukti, the tactfulness. So such people you have to use, yukti. In fact, one of the famous Tenariram stories there, where once Tenariram suddenly noticed that there were a couple of thieves lurking in the garden and they're just waiting for them to sleep. So deliberately, he loudly says that, he calls his wife and says, pack all your jewelries, there are so much of robbery going on in the village and we'll dump it inside the well.
Yeah.
So then what he does exactly is he takes a lot of stones and, you know, and fills the trunk and deliberately makes a loud splash so that the thieves hear that. And the thieves overheard this conversation. So then he had a peaceful sleep and full night. These thieves, they were pulling, drawing the water out and, you know, they were splashing it out, which was indirectly what they were doing. They were gardening. They were putting water to the garden, which was overdue for a long time. So morning, our Tenaliram gets up and looks at the thief and says, thank you for your great service and all. They saw Tenaliram and they ran away. So this is again a way of yukti, way of dealing with such, you know, where in fact you can see that if you are intelligent, if you know how to deal with people, they can actually serve you. So this is one more way of, you know, handling, rather than getting irritated, getting angry, going and crying out in front of others. This is again a common phenomenon. At no point we should lose our inner calm, inner peace. So when we learn this attitude of how to deal with situations and obstacles, we will always be at peace and happiness. It's always a way to handle a situation.
Brother Ganesh, but these rajasic obstacles, when we say, they can also be within us, isn't it?
Yes.
It's not necessarily manifesting in somebody else's character or behavior.
Yes, absolutely.
It could also be within us.
Yes.
And means a similar parallel that I can draw from here is a rajasic obstacle is usually this ahankara, the ego that I have done such and such seva, you know, which is the greatest obstacle for seva. And just like Surasa, it will actually eat you up.
Yes.
It's a demonic tendency, yes, which is going to eat you up fully.
It's like the acidity which eats you up from inside.
Exactly. You know, so this particular tendency of doership or having this feeling that, oh, I have done such and such work, such and such seva was done by me. Swami gives a very beautiful example for this, you know. He says he had gone for one convention where Swami was supposed to talk, and it was afternoon time. I don't know if it was Chennai or which place. It was really hot and humid there. And there were these big fans, you know, the fans with huge long blades, right, which, you know, the olden style. They were there, but none of them were turned on, and all the devotees and the guests seated there, you know, they were all sweating like profusely. And Bhagwan was like, you know, why are you not turning it on? And Swami says they all showed him something on the blades. On the blades of the fan was the name of the donor of the fan.
Oh, so they wanted them to see the name.
So the donor did not want the fan to be turned off until everybody knew who had donated the fan.
Mm.
You know, what an atrocious situation.
Absolutely.
Turned on, right? If it is on, then
they cannot see the name.
He wanted it turned off. So that everybody could take notice of who has contributed for this fan.
Yeah.
His name was on the blades of the fan.
Even if you see in some temples and some places, now the font size of the name of the donor is the biggest.
Yes.
So that it is
sometimes even bigger than the deity's name.
Deity's name
is published on top.
The whole purpose is lost. I mean, the whole purpose of the doing seva is lost in that.
So this kind of an obstacle which we personally face within us, this kind of feeling of doership or this ego that I have done something, cropping up is also a rajasic obstacle, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And for that, Swami says you have to use yukti.
Mm-hmm.
That is, you have to use intelligent ways. That is, the symbolism here is Hanuman grew himself into a very large size of 100 yojanas, and immediately shrunk to become nothing. You know, so the yukti here possibly is that moment such thought comes, we have to remind ourselves, Swami, I am nothing, I am nothing, you are everything. Even as I say this, there's a beautiful experience which I heard from a very advanced master. He was sharing this experience of his, and he said that by Bhagwan's grace, he had many visions and, you know, in his meditations, often he would converse with God and get guidance and all that. In one such conversation, he had this particular vision where God showed him a huge screen, a huge black screen, and there were many small twinkling dots on the screen. This is the vision he saw in his meditation. He's a very good sadhaka, a very good devotee of Bhagwan. And he saw this vision in his meditation. And so at that time, this spiritual ego, as he was mentioning, which is the most dangerous thing. All great scriptures, all great masters, including Bhagwan himself, has told us that the spiritual ego is a very, very dangerous thing. To feel that I am more spiritually evolved than you, or I am a greater sevak than you, is the greatest disaster for any individual, especially if he is a sadhaka.
Mm.
And in this case, he saw this black screen, huge black expanse actually, with twinkling dots all around. So in his kind of spiritual arrogance, he asked divinity or God in his meditation, Lord, in this vast creation which you are showing me, am I this twinkling dot?
Mm.
You know, that is a twinkling star. He thought he was a twinkling star in the firmament of the universe which the Lord has created because of his spiritual splendor.
Mm-hmm.
And the Lord just smiled and said, Bhagavan said, this star which you see here is actually the sun that rises every morning, that you see every morning.
Okay.
That very moment his ego completely was crushed, because if that huge sun, the massive sun of our solar system is but a speck, a dot in the expanse of the universe, what am I?
Absolutely.
The earth itself is a speck, and I am probably a microscopic, nanoscopic speck on this earth. So who am I after all? The moment this realization dawned on him, he began to cry, and he cried out to the Lord and he said, Swami, I am nothing, nothing, nothing. And moment this feeling genuinely came from within him, he said the whole vision that he was seeing turned into bright light, a large expanse of bright light. And now he heard the voice of divinity tell him that now you are this.
Okay.
When you say you are nothing, you become everything. When you think you are everything, actually the reality is you are nothing. So this rajasic obstacle of feeling of doership, or I am the guy who did everything, can be overcome by repeatedly reminding ourselves, like Hanuman made himself very small, we also have to make ourselves very small and say, Swami, I am nothing, you are the doer, I am nothing, you did everything.
In fact, Swami also says, like, social service should neither be social service nor should neither be slow-shell nor should
it
be
should not be slow-shell or show-shell.
Yeah, correct.
There's no show-off, neither should it be slow.
Correct.
Moving on to the next obstacle, then Hanuman faces Simhika. She's also known as Chayagrahi. And she had a gift, she had a boon, wherein if there's a bird which is flying over the ocean, if there's a shadow, if she catches onto the shadow, the bird would come down and she'll eat the bird. That was the boon which was given to her. And now she caught the shadow of a wrong person. Hanuman was flying and she catches the shadow of Hanuman, and we know what happened next moment. Hanuman, just like any tamasic obstacle, here Simhika is again, you know, compared to a tamasic obstacle, his reaction was he gave one punch, one shot, and that's it. And here, as brother was saying, there are certain obstacles which are internal, like laziness. Tamasik, tamoguna is nothing but laziness. And even the Arishad Vargas, Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Madama, Atsarya, all which is there inside, we should be absolutely ruthless in dealing with them. As Swami gives an example, suppose you are holding a rope, or a cobra snake, all the while thinking that it is a rope. The moment you realize it's a cobra snake, what do? You leave it slowly?
No.
You just throw it with a jerk, isn't it? So that is the reaction, and that should be the attitude towards any bad habit or a wrong, you know, tendencies in us. We should not, you know, just like Swami says, even the large ocean, okay, does not tolerate a dust. You see, anything which goes into the, all the debris is washed back to the shore. It does not tolerate any dust. One may say, in such a huge ocean, this little bit of debris, what difference it is going to make? As there's a popular quote, the solution to pollution is dilution. Okay, even ocean does not accept, and that's the reason why ocean is, and so many teachings that we have to learn from ocean. It does not tolerate a dirt. Similarly, in our, you know, chitta akasha, in our thought, we should not even tolerate bad thoughts, negative thoughts. Yes, as there's a famous devotee in Shirdi Baba's time, who's to shout Allahu Akbar whenever any bad thought. And the villagers were getting disturbed. What is this Shirdi Baba? What Baba? Why is he shouting like that? Then Shirdi Baba says, whenever that bad, any bad thought comes, he used to shout Allahu Akbar. He used to call out.
In fact, Baba used to say, he is better than you. You keep quiet.
You keep quiet. You come. And this technique is what we call as Pratipaksha Bhava. You know, you just put the opposite feeling when they're negative, and it works. It definitely works. So this is the way in which we should treat a tamasic obstacle. You should not tolerate, you should not negotiate, we'll see later and all, because...
Basically you're saying that our old vasanas, which are the tendency,
which is deep-seated
habits,
yes.
Which are deep-seated, if they become an obstacle in our seva to the Lord,
yes,
we have to deal with them very strongly.
Very strongly. You know, negotiation, like he did with Surasa. Okay, there's no time. The moment, for example, when we keep an alarm clock, 5 o'clock, okay, the morning you get up with the alarm, and you feel, the mind says, 5 more minutes. That is a negotiating habit of the mind, you know, 5 more minutes. And you know what happens, you know, you put it in snooze and then it goes on, and you know, and it's a daily experience for thousands of people all around. So the thing which Swami says is, as soon as the alarm rings, get up and walk. You know, you should not start discussing or thinking what to do and, you know, listen to the mind. Mind is number one trickster. Number one trickster. Okay, don't allow it, and don't give it the time to negotiate. If you give it the time, you're gone. Okay, so this is how you should deal with the tamasic obstacle. Then he goes further, and obviously at the door of Lanka, who's there? Lankini is there. And Lankini embodies ego.
The body consciousness.
Body consciousness. And again, we know what happens to Lankini. She gets a
punch.
A straight punch. Okay, yeah. There was also the moment she shouts, "Hey thief, what are you? Where are you going inside?" She tries
to strike Hanuman.
Strike Hanuman, but Hanuman gives a nice blow. And that's how we should deal with ourselves, our ego. The Swami says, do everything, be nothing. Just now, Brother Giridhar was explaining. That is the safest and the greatest attitude that one can cultivate. You know. So then, after that, he goes inside and meets Mother Sita, who embodies Jivatma. So in the whole journey, if you see the attitude of Hanuman is how he dealt with the sattvic obstacle, how he dealt with the rajasic obstacle using tact, sattvic obstacle using, you know, a polite gesture of saying no. Right now I'm in Ramakarya. And because it's a sattvic obstacle, the sattvic person will understand. He will not misunderstand. And if he misunderstand, means he is not a sattvic person. I mean, you don't have to really give so much time, you know, thinking about it. And how to deal with the tamasic obstacle, which generally is within us. And also Lankini, which is the ego, the body consciousness. Or the finally, when he reaches Mother Sita, Mother, you know, obviously very happy to meet the son. Okay, and later she also blesses him that you can go and... In fact, Swami says in the discourse, many of the translators of Ramayana says that mother just gave permission that you go and eat the fruit. Yeah. Actually, mother told very clearly that the fruits which have fallen down on the ground, because that belongs to earth. And what belongs to earth is everyone's.
Okay.
It cannot be, you know... So you pick up those fruits, and obviously Hanuman goes and eats only those fruits, and to attract the attention of the Rakshasis, he goes about breaking the branches and all that, because he had to finish his agenda of meeting Ravana. So there also Mother Sita, following the Dharma, it is like you take the fruits which has fallen down on the ground and satiate your hunger. So here the nice analogy is, when you go to a mother and when she sends off a son, she obviously packs a nice tiffin box and sends food. Okay, so Mother Sita, you know, ensured that the son Hanuman is full, and his stomach is full before he leaves. Whereas when father sent, he kept obstacles, because father always wants the son to grow stronger. So Lord Rama kept obstacles, the Lord, so that he grows, obviously. And when mother sent, there's a single straight flight back to Rama. There was no, again, the Simita,
no obstacles
came. This is one more beautiful way of seeing the beautiful relation of Hanuman with Lord Rama and Mother Sita.
In terms of seva, again, we see that very clearly here, that Hanuman actually partook of water and food, fruits and other things, only after he found Mother Sita and, you know, Mother Sita gave him those instructions, go ahead, my dear son, you must be hungry, you know. So, until that happened, he did not stop his Ramakarya. I mean, look at his determination.
Absolutely.
Amazing.
Single-pointed determination.
Single-pointed steadfastness and all. And...
In fact, there are a few more characters,
isn't it, Raghu?
Actually,
we are running out of time.
We are running out of time.
It's already 12:30. Just I would like to mention something. As you said, like Hanuman was fully engaged in Ramakarya. I just want, as Swami has said, paropakarartham idam shariram. This body itself is given for service of society. So from Hanuman's example, we can learn that Hanuman lives up to this dictum that Swami has said, right? In fact, there is one small story that I would like to share, and we will conclude with this. It seems there was a man, and he was going in street on a wintry night, very chill and cold night, and he, while going on the corner of a street, he sees a small boy sitting. And he was not having proper clothing, and he was shivering, and he was looking very hungry, and a poor and abandoned small boy. And when the man saw that child, he just told God, "Oh God, why are you doing this? After all, what is the big fault that this small boy has done? Why don't you do something? Why don't you help that boy?" And that man just became frustrated with God, and he went home and he slept. And in his dream, God comes and says, "See, man, you are saying I didn't do anything. I have created you. I have created you. So it's your duty to go and help that child, small child." So I just, when we are talking about Hanuman as the greatest example, like Hanuman, as you said, he didn't eat anything till he found Mother Sita, right? When he was sent by Lord Rama, he took Ramakarya as the, gave priority to Ramakarya and did the full thing.
And this feeling comes when you feel that your Swami is Bhagwan's instrument.
Yes.
Feeling of being his instrument, then only you will go ahead and, you know, do this.
So brother, in fact we had planned to
speak about some more characters.
Yeah,
yes.
Some more characters, and we don't have time right now. So, how about next Thursday? You will be here.
Unfortunately, we're not around here next Thursday.
One of the Thursdays,
but
again.
Maybe, yes. Sometime in August,
yeah,
we can catch up again and talk more about Lakshmana, the boatman, squirrel, which is a famous example of Seva, Bharata, and Rama himself.
Rama himself, yes. As you have told. Yeah, I hope Brother Ganesh also will join us in one of the Thursdays.
Surely, it will be my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you very much for coming, both of you. So, dear listeners, with that, we come to the end of the segment. And as both of them said, in one of the coming Thursdays, again, we will talk more on the stories from Ramayana and learn lessons on Seva. Offering this segment at Bhagavan's Lotus Feet, we conclude for today. Jai Sai Ram.
மனோஜபம் மாருதி துல்ய வேகம் ஜிதேந்திரியம் புத்திமதா வரிஷ்டம் வாதாத்மஜம் வானரயூத முக்கியம் ஸ்ரீராமதூதம் சரணம் பிரபத்யே ஸ்ரீராமதூதம் சரணம் பிரபத்யே ஸ்ரீராமதூதம் சரணம்
வாயு குமாரா வனர் வீரா வாயு குமாரா வனர் வீரா அதி பலவந்தா ஹனுமந்தா அதி பலவந்த ஹனுமந்தா கீசரி நந்தன அஞ்சனி புத்ரா கீசரி நந்தன அஞ்சனி புத்ரா जय हो जय हो पवन कुमारा
जय हो पवन कुमारा
जय हो जय हो पवन कुमारा
जय हो पवन कुमारा
जय हो जय हो पवन कुमारा जय हो जय हो पवन कुमारा वायु कुमारा वानर वीरा अति बलवंता हनुमंता கேசரி நந்தன அஞ்சனி புத்ரா ஜய ஹோ ஜய ஹோ பவன குமாரா 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 வாயு குமாரா வானர வீரா
Oh,